It's the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson, Rob Gutman, Andy Heaton and Gareth Roberts with you from now until 7:30, talking about the Reds, that is Liverpool Football Club, for those of you who aren't certain of that sort of thing, and other matters arising as well. We've got a Gito Llewellyn coming up to talk about Swansea. He's coming up after the break. We're also going to have a chat about Liverpool's competition for places, that this isn't as straightforward a thing as it sort of feels as though it is at times. There's more to it than the obvious. We're going to talk about that very, very soon as well, and obviously we're going to be looking ahead to Swansea City versus Liverpool. But having these three big hitters here for such a big weekend for Liverpool, I want to start with a conversation around John Henry's comments this week about developing or not developing the Anfield Road. And firstly, Andy Heaton, the context in which the comments are offered, yet again, it's a conversation about something else in a place that isn't Liverpool, to a group of journalists who aren't Liverpool journalists, and yet Liverpool are being spoken about. Admittedly, in answer to a question, so let's not go too far on this, but Liverpool are being spoken about in that context where there isn't, for instance, a Tony Barrett or an Andy Kelly to ask a follow-up question.
It's a question easily swerved as well. When you're a man as well versed as John W. Henry with these kinds of things, if you don't answer a question, you don't answer a question. it's been interesting. I mean, the comment itself is interesting, but the fallout has been even more interesting in so much as the reaction on both sides. My opinion of it is that John Henry doesn't speak out about Liverpool unless he's got something to say. And we all know how these things kind of work, you know, before press conferences start, kind of brief. Well, if you ask him this, you might get an answer on that. And I think he was sending a message, to be blunt.
Do you think he was sending a message, Rob Cupman?
I don't know, because it is hugely about the context, and I take Andy's point, but people are, and they do just say things when journalists are in front of them. I tell you what I do think he owes Liverpool. If you want to be, you can be generous towards him and say, look, it's a statement, and we focus very much on it as though it's directed at the protest, whereas I think you could interpret it more widely as it's a commentary on how English football fans are unhappy at paying certain price levels, because it is throughout the game that movement, and he's correct to have observed that. So he's, on one level, he's being factual. However, he will have become very aware that we're riled by this. We feel it was insensitive, a dig, unnecessary. So it did immediately, pretty swiftly, become incumbent upon him to clarify. And I think the lack of clarification is a slightly more worrying for me than the initial quote.
What's interesting is the phraseology, the actual quote, the wording of it's almost semi-rehearsed. If you look at the words used, words are foreclose, further expansion, next step, ticket prices are being an issue in England. It's a rehearsed line. It's not like an off-the-cuff answer. And you look how many times John Henry has spoken about Liverpool in the last, three or four seasons, that you probably count on one hand.
Why would you expect, by the way, just out of interest, why would you expect a clarification? Because what history is there of clarifications when people go to, for instance, New York and give and talk about splits in the fan base? If you're Ian Eyre, there was never a clarification on that. Where's the history of clarifications?
Well, I'm not saying I expect.
There's an open letter.
Let's put it this way. Somebody this side of the pond would have picked up the phone to him, sent him an email going, that did not play well at all, boss. Just so you know, it really played badly. I'm sure you didn't quite intend it like that. It didn't play well. Do you want to say anything else? So I do think he will have had, it will have crossed his mind, or he will have been given the opportunity to have considered doing it. Should we have expected it? I don't. Well, that's another. Well, we would have liked it, I think, as a minimum. I think we'd have thought it would bring good manners to us as the fans. But I do expect it. That okay. He hasn't. Doesn't surprise me.
I'm more inclined to agree with Andy on this, and that I think, you know, John W. Henry's an experienced businessman. He's been involved at Liverpool for quite a time now. He's been involved in sports teams for quite a time now. He knows how fans think about certain issues. And to suggest that it's a throwaway comment and he said it because there's a microphone in front of him, I don't think so. I mean, he's a man who's proven over time that he's very, very careful about what he says and when he says it. And on this, I feel like he's throwing a bit of a grenade at us and he's letting it explode now. It's reignited sort of fan-on-fan argument about, you lot were the type of person who protested against tickets and now the club can't build that stand. And for me, you know, I've not enjoyed it. I don't understand why it comes now, why it's said now, and it's also in the context of that Ian Ayre also did an interview with FC Business and also suggested that, you know, this stand wasn't going to happen. I mean, we can go back and say, well, it's only ever been outline plan permission and that sort of thing. But if you go back to the very start, if it was sold to us as a vision that Anfield was going to be 54,000, I don't think anyone would say that that was an acceptable solution after all these years. And that's what we're now being sold, that it's just, it could just stop at 54,000. And I don't think that's good enough. I don't think that's ambitious enough. I think you've got the planning permission there to put another 5,000 on. I think Liverpool should be doing that. And you know, we ran a piece on the site this week from you know, John Milburn, who's a fan who goes to match just like we do, and I thought he made some very good points in it, in that, you know, one thing that sort of screams out to me is that they want a quick return on the investment. They're not going to get a quick return on Anfield Road because there's not a lot of, if any, corporate offer. And yeah, it rings a few alarm bells for me. I mean, it suggests maybe to my mind that, you know, perhaps they're getting a little bit bored with being involved at Liverpool. And, you know, people are sort of jumping on people and saying, oh, well, you're just having a go at FSG and all this, and why are you doing it now? Look at the manager we've got and everything else. It's quite fine in my book to like Jurgen Klopp, to like the football we're playing, to like the new main stand, but to also be concerned that we're not doing something with the Anfield Road. They're not mutually exclusive concepts.
Do you think there's an element, and I'd love everyone's opinion on this, one other reason why you might have said that, and I'm just wild speculation here, but is there an element of, well, we've taken this as far as we can? We've taken this as far, not as far as we, but as far as we're willing to do so. And, I mean, we all know the rumours about, you know, people looking at the club, blah, blah, blah. Could it be read in a way that, you know, we've taken it as far as we can if someone wants to come and further this, you know?
Do you know what? If we're looking for deliberation here, and you know, Ian, I think the Ian Ayre statement is perhaps the more interesting, because it was a very categorical, there are no plans for the Anfield Road. If you want to take it as Henry's statement as deliberate, and I'm not saying it wasn't, I'm saying I just don't know. And I take the point that he's experienced enough, etc., etc., but I don't think that's categorical proof in itself. But either way, if they are delivering a message, I think it may be a tenderisation process for bringing, not for getting out of the club, for introducing some level of corporate into that, or at least some sort of semi-corporate going, look, do you know what? We found a way to do the Anfield Road. Here's the next announcements in 6 months. And we've got this £150 semi-corporate ticket. They call it something, they come up with some new buzzword for it. It justifies it. I think they'll have seen a massive return on their investment on this main stand thing from mainly from the corporate yield. They'd love to do this again, but they need a slightly different model.
But then, Rob, they haven't even sold out the corporate in the new main stand.
It doesn't matter.
It hasn't worked out as they planned, because not only have they not sold out all the corporate offer in the main stand, but also there's no name on the main stand. Mm. And that was huge in their pitch, that, you know, the main stand would have a name on it, that it would be X main stand, and that might be to do with
other talks they're in. We can't, I mean, that's hard to glean.
No, Ian Ayre went and briefed the loads of journalists last year that we were only two steps away from getting a £90 million name and rights deal. It was absolute codswallop, and I know we got hold over the goals for that.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't know anything about that. All I would speculate on the naming rights thing is if this could be very much linked to investment. But that's a whole separate issue. I think that I don't know quite why they're pouring such cold water on the Anfield Road development, because I don't think anyone was being particularly hot for it at the moment.
No,
we were all still celebrating the new main stand.
That's the odd thing.
We weren't all going, whoa, come on, now bring on the... Yeah, of course there were murmurs and comments around it, but it wasn't like there was a snowballing demand for it straight away. So why have they done this at this stage? I don't think they're heading something... I think the thing they're heading off of the... We're not heading off of the past. I think they're tenderising for a different shape to the development.
But there's a year left on this outline plan of permission that they've got. So, yeah, that's the bit that sort of I don't get either. I mean, you know, like I said before, I believe John Henry would know what the impact of his quotes would be. So why now? Liverpool are flying. Everyone's happy. You know, everyone's proud, if you like, of the development of the main stand. Most people are saying they've done a good job. The main stand looks great inside and out. So to do this now, I don't really understand it. And to bring the ticket prices in would clearly cause problems at this end, you know, and it has done. And we've got, as I say, we've got fans accusing each other of all kinds now. And you know, and I'm judging this solely on the basis as well of the comments we're getting. I mean, I thought, for instance, the piece that we ran on the site this week was entirely fair. It was saying, I'd like to see, you know, the Anfield Road developed just simply because there's 20,000 people waiting on our list to get inside Anfield with a season ticket and they're on. And for that reason alone, that's why we want to develop. That's a fair enough point. You know, Liverpool fans should want their club to be ambitious on and off the pitch. And I don't really understand why people start kicking off the other way when people ask for that. We want Liverpool to be ambitious. We don't want them to get lost in the crowd. And as things stand, Liverpool will soon have something like only the seventh biggest stadium in the country. Liverpool should be aspiring for more. It makes a statement, rightly or wrongly, how big your ground is, and if you decide to go ahead with this work, it makes a statement to the wider world. We're serious. We're looking to move on. We're improving the business. We want more fans inside the ground.
I mean, do you think it's an attempt to a carrot and stick attempt to restart the conversation about ticket prices? I mean,
if you're asking me, and you are asking me because we're going into the break, I think I think it tells you that all the way through. John Henry's not been happy with the ticket price thing. I actually think it's as much an expression of frustration as it is anything
else.
Very
stung by it.
Yeah, I think very stung by it. Stung by the way in which probably his own people handled it, and stung by the aftermath of it, and stung by the fact that it's a league-wide phenomenon, and stung by the fact that he doesn't know exactly what you do next, because their entire dogmatic model was based around this idea of tiered prices, and they've had the wrists slapped effectively by the very punters that they probably still feel as though they came in and saved, and can't quite understand why they've allowed themselves to get in that position and have the wrists slapped. That's what I think. I could be wrong. Do let us know what you think. And if you're listening, John Henry, you let us know what you think. Our open door policy to this sort of thing continues. If you want an actual chat, all we do is we press play and record. We all talk for a while. Then we press stop. It allows there to be context and people can explain themselves at as much length as they like. We're always here. This is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. We'll be back after the break to talk about competition for places. Welcome back to the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. That was Disco 2000 by Pulp. And in front of me, I've got Rob Gutman, Andy Heaton and Gareth Roberts. As we get close to 7 o'clock, we'll go at 100 miles an hour. We've been talking on and off about this, but I'm more and more, it's almost firming up in my mind as a bit of an issue, Gareth. Competition for places, the manager's talked it up this week, and he's right too. You know, I think you've seen it, but it's a double-edged sword, because fitness and development is also in competition for places for a few of these. So I think Sturridge is sound. He's going to be sound. He's in the business of being Daniel Sturridge, coming off the bench. Look, he looked dead sharp, I thought, when he came on against Hull. Wins the penalty.
Yeah.
No doubt. Lucas looks sharp at Derby. Absolutely sharp as anything. You know, we know he's not as sharp as he used to be, and he's never going to be again now because of the injuries and the time he's had. But Origi, Grujic, Ejaria, Emre Can, Ings, Moreno, Joe Gomez and Shea Ojo, the latter two, obviously, when they're back to full fitness. These are lads who, forget sharpness for a second, they're all of an age where they need to be playing regular football. They need to be getting better at their football. So at the minute, we've got no European football. It helps with the prep, but it means that these lads, you know, there's every chance that they're going to get an arrested development situation.
Yeah, I mean, Klopp's doing his best, isn't he, I think, to use the under-23s. I mean, you know, not very long ago, if you were seeing someone you would regard as being on the periphery of the first team, I'm thinking Danny Ings here. Yeah. It would be seen as a huge slight on him that he was being sent to play for the under-23s, and yet now it's accepted that that's all right, almost. It's like, you know, he's going and getting some game time, he's getting sharper, he's scoring goals. He looks like he's enjoying scoring the goals as well, importantly. He's not sulking round there when he's playing. So he seems to be using the under-23s as best as he can. I think he threw in a little behind closed door friendly against Huddersfield as well, didn't he?
Could be a few of them.
Yeah, it does feel like there could be a few of them. That's what I was going to say, because I think Klopp's really clever on trying to keep them as fit and sharp as possible. But you know, there is the problem that there simply isn't enough games for them to get the level of competition that they do need. You're right to say.
The thing about the sharp thing, Rob, is, you know, we know where our ambitions are this season, at least at the moment. They're for silver shiny things, and one silver shiny thing in particular. But if, for instance, you know, we go out against Swansea tomorrow and someone gets a leg breaker, then you're in a situation where all those lads I've just mentioned, basically, you know, I don't think any of the ones I've just mentioned, actually, with the exception of Moreno, first game of the season, have started a league game. So now they're lashed in, they're closer and closer to the bench. You know, obviously Sturridge is an exception on this, but so and that's where, because they have, again, the sharpness becomes a thing. And if no one does get an injury and we get into November and then that sort of thing starts to happen, you could be having to blood two or three of these all at once and making the best of it. And that's the frustration. That's something our rivals haven't got to worry about.
Because they've got Europe.
Yeah.
I suppose, yes. You know, but this is endemic of the fact that we're replete with luxury at the moment. Quite frankly, we take this. This is all good problem to have, and I know your point is correct. Yes, suddenly we get the injury crisis. Suddenly they're not fit. But which way round would you rather have?
Well, obviously I was. You're right, but I'm also thinking about these footballers and their development. That's an issue as well.
I'm thinking about Liverpool Football Club, but yeah, you know, you're right. But who knows? Some players do have an ability to be dropped in and are fine. Origi has perhaps looked like one of those who isn't, who needs the games to get into his stride. As Gareth says, Klopp's been big on the behind closed doors. There's the under-23s. But it is also a long season in terms of what will come our way more organically anyway. We could have one lad drop out, not three or four, and someone's going to get games. There's the African Nations where we'll be outside Sadio Mane for a month. Towards Christmas, sometimes you get midweek league games coming into play. There's a League Cup tie with Tottenham, which is no small potatoes here, and three or four lads will drop in, and hopefully we get through that. I think it sort of will take care of itself. What you're worrying about is we're suddenly plunging into an injury crisis and Grujic, Origi and that parachuted in.
I'm not that worried about that because I think, for instance, I'm not worried about in this context, I'm not worried about Sturridge, I'm not worried about Klaver, I'm not worried about Lucas, I'm not worried about Mignolet, Andy. I'm not worried about the idea that those four had to come in because they're pros of a certain age. My worry is that there's lads who, by the way, all look like they could be real assets for Liverpool between the ages of 18 and 22. Ings being the exception in there, 18-22, 18-23, who need to get games of football this time in their lives. They need to be playing regular football at as high a level as possible to develop into the footballers you want them to be.
I think what helps them is that there's no real established order at Liverpool, bar maybe Phil Coutinho, you know, and maybe Dejan Lovren when he's fit. So there's opportunity there. I think sometimes young players go off the ball because do you think, oh, I'm never going to get a chance? Where I think it's quite clear, you look at the amount of debuts that Jurgen Klopp's given new players since he's arrived, that there is opportunity there. If you keep your head down, you work hard in training, and you show a little bit, you know, you'll get a chance. And also, I think there's the one thing that you always give Ferguson credit for is time in games and picking plays for groups of games and blocks of games and all that. So you just wonder whether he's looking at the fixture calendar and going, right, okay, scenario A, B and C. If scenario A happens, we can give Ovi Ejaria a game here, here and here. Not like one month, one the next, and one the next. Like three or four back to back. And then giving him that little bit of sugar in. If it excels, great, keep him in. If he doesn't, then, you know, you've lost nothing.
I think what's interesting as well is what Michael Beale's been saying in that he takes the under-23s to the first team games as a collective, gets them to watch Liverpool and says, watch the man in your position, because that's who you're fighting with for a place. And then they're going out. So they they went out literally the day after Liverpool had played Hull. They go and play at Tranmere. And it's in their heads. That's the fella I've got to be better than. So Trent Alexander-Arnold's going out there. He's now being trained up as a right-back by the looks of things. And he's watched Klein. And he's going, right, I've got to be as good as Klein then. And he had an absolute belter of a game. He scores a goal.
From right back.
Yeah, from right back. And then, you know, and then the manager's interviewed, Beals were interviewed afterwards. And his comment is, yeah, he was fantastic, but he's now got to do that 10 games in a row. And it just feels to me like the right things are being said all the time by Liverpool. It seems like they've got the coaching nailed. It seems like it's joined up and there's joined up thinking. It's not this team doing this over here and this team doing this over there and the academy being forgotten about and all that sort of thing. We've had all that in the past. It feels like it is joined up at the moment, which is obviously a positive thing.
I think also, Neil, the young players, you've named in that quickly, Ejaria and Ojo, and Joe Gomez to a degree. They're very young. They don't really have a right. Is that the right? To a dozen games at that age, and they probably get even if nobody gets injured, they still get three in the FA Cup, two or three in the League Cup, and a sub appearance here or there, which is no bad return at 18 for a team club like Liverpool.
And the brutal reality is, Neil, if a youngster's good enough, you know, I know it's a cliche, but they play.
They'll force their way through. Okay, this is the Anfield Wrap. After the break, we'll be speaking to Gito Llewellyn about Swansea, and then we'll be having a chat about Swansea. Don't go anywhere. Yep, joined now by Gito on the strangeness of Swansea, is what I've just said to him, and I've grabbed him on the phone, and it does, the whole thing just seems really rather odd, Gito. You know, there's good performances getting lashed in, but then there's not necessarily points being added, being put on the board on the one hand. You know, you think it looks like it's all going to get boxed off, and then it doesn't. Patterns of play have never seemed like they're entirely there since, well, around this time 12 months ago. The manager's seemingly under pressure, but not really in that much of an intense, he's actually under pressure way. It's a really, really strange little situation that Swansea have ended up in, as far as I'm concerned.
It's completely bizarre. It's the whole club's just been turned upside down over the last 12 months, if I'm honest. We were always known as this extremely well-run club in South Wales. And you know, over the last 12 months, that's very quickly unraveled to the point where we've now got a manager who seems to be, well, his days seem to be numbered, if you believe the media. We're already looking for a new manager, and the options aren't too encouraging, if I'm honest. Performances have generally been pretty terrible on the pitch, but really did improve quite a lot over the weekend, which makes the timing of this managerial speculation even more crazy. This all with the backdrop then of an unhappy fan base, which is still really coming to terms with an unpopular American-led takeover. Mm. So the club is just one big shambles at the moment, if I'm honest. It's not something that we're used to, if I'm being honest.
Well, it's the first time in years that's been the case. I mean, you know, you're used to sort of clubs finding them. It's the speed with which this has happened, and maybe it's a reminder to all clubs, really, that, you know, we may or may not be happy with certain owners at certain times, but that, you know, things can spiral out of control quite quickly without there being a level of stability there. And I'm stunned. I mean, I honestly remember doing interviews with Swansea supporters around 12 months ago, and the conversation was always one about, you know, how calm the club was, and the fact that it always seemed to be, if not necessarily on an upwards trajectory, then an even keel, for want of, you know, to maybe mix some metaphors. And yet there's it's the speed with which it now feels like the whole thing's in a bit of a state of chassis, and suddenly it is linked to what's on the pitch. It wouldn't surprise you if Swansea end up in a fair bit of trouble this campaign.
Oh, we're fully anticipating a relegation battle. You know, it's going to be a tough season ahead with what's been going on. But you're right. In the past, we've actually been pretty smug about the way that we've been run. You know, everybody else has had their troubles, etc. For the last 15 years, you probably couldn't find a better run club in the whole country. You know, we've been one of the great success stories of this country's footballing history, the way we've gone from the bottom of League Two to the Premier League, and all of them on the back of sustainability, not, you know, one big benefactor or anything like that. It's been something we've all taken great pride in, and the frustrating thing at the moment is that we've thrown that all away. We had a solid on-field philosophy, which, you know, it led to continuity. Whenever we lost a manager, we found somebody else who could carry on that good work. What we're seeing on the pitch at the moment is really a style of football we haven't seen since we were probably in the bottom division, if I'm honest, in terms of the negativity of it and the lack of shape and cohesion that we're seeing. So
the strange thing is, from the outside looking in, and, you know, we've been speaking about this on a couple of our shows, and one of the things that sort of strikes you as well is, you go to Burnley, if you're Liverpool, you go to Burnley and you think these can upset the apple cart. They can play a certain type of football. They can, you know, they can block you off. They're used to all of that. The strange thing for Swansea, watching them from afar, is the players themselves don't suit this type of football. And that's why if Swansea try and do that from a Liverpool point of view, I'm almost thinking, well, you know, if they try and do that, I feel as though we'll find the gaps in some way. Admittedly, I also think if they try and play football, we may well find a way to do them a football. But what I mean is, having footballers do what doesn't seem natural or right for them, it never works out well in the end.
No, I agree with you. I think the whole time Francesco Guidolin's been our manager, the feeling's been there that he's a poor fit, really. He kept us up last season, but he kept us up playing poor football in a very poor league. This season, I do think the general standard of the Premier League has increased, it's improved, and that's part of the worrying thing about this. Can we really be that lucky twice? We've got some very good footballers, but they're being played out of position, they're being played in a way which doesn't really play to their strengths. You know, that's the uncomfortable thing, and that's why I think a lot of fans would be perfectly happy to see Guidolin go. What we're unhappy about really is the way that it's all been handled, and the fact that managers are apparently being spoken to behind his back, and there are meetings taking place in airports, if you believe what's being written. So, but yeah, you're right when you talk about players not really fitting a style. You get the feeling that if we do play to our strengths, we're capable of much better than we're playing at the moment. And against Manchester City, actually, we brought Leon Britton in for the first time since the opening day against Burnley, and instantly our passing improved. He may be 34, Leon Britton, but he's still a brilliant controller of the play, a very intelligent midfielder. And he's still probably as important to us as he's ever been. And if we play to our strengths and use players like Leon Britton, we can still pass the ball well. We can still play with positivity and with a bit of energy. I'd love to see us play against Liverpool the way we did against Manchester City, if I'm honest. But the way the club is at the moment, you don't know if that's going to happen.
And that's, in a sense, that's one of the toughest aspects of this, really, is that it's, you know, is that there's... Britain's a good example, actually, because he is 34, and therefore, you know, there is a thing that say, well, he's 34, and etc. etc. But the sort of football that Britain wants to play suits Key. The sort of football that Britain wants to play suits Jack Cork. It suits, I'd say, it suits Leroy Fair. I think it suits Sigurdsson. I think it suits Llorente. You know, this just simply because Llorente is 6'5" doesn't mean he just wants to have a blammed at his head every 5 minutes. He wants it along the deck. He wants to be able to use his ability, and you know that's right the way through the side. Neil Taylor's still the same excellent left back that he was. There's just, you know, maybe there's some sort of concern that these players have, you know, almost grown old in possession of the shirt. But with the exception of Britain, it doesn't appear that that's entirely the case. There might be a little bit of sort of inbuilt complacency is the wrong word, but that maybe people get a bit too comfortable sometimes. But the conveyor belt just seems to have stopped working, and I think that'd be the thing that'd be concerning me if I was you at this stage. The conveyor belt, both for the managers and then also for the players being bought, has just sort of stopped functioning the way in which it used to.
Yeah, that's true. We used to be fantastic in the transfer market. That doesn't seem to have been the case for quite a while now. Over the summer, there was just no shape to it at all. I mean, the fact that we sold Andre Ayew and Ashley Williams, two of our most important players last season, in the week before the start of the season, and brought our only two strikers in the same week. You know, that's something no healthy club would do, actually.
Yeah.
You know, a better run club would have done their deals much earlier in the summer. And it's left us playing major catch-up, and it's left us with big holes in the team. But yeah, you're right, we shouldn't be relying on 34-year-olds. I mean, no matter how good Leon Britton is, and you're right, he is the kind of player that improves the players around him when he's in the team. But ideally, he would have younger options who'd be ready to take his place in the squad. Angel Rangel is another one. He's way over his 30s now, but he was brought in against Manchester City, and he doesn't have the same pace, but he's got this intelligence which improves the players around him and gets them playing better football. But again, you know, on the weekend, Angel Rangel could be playing against Sadio Mane, and that kind of pace could destroy him, no matter how good a footballer he is.
It's sort of protecting those players and having the shape to protect them, and maybe that's one of the reasons why the manager's ended up going down the route he's chosen to go down. But the other thing that you were saying before as well, with the before we talk specifically about this game, about these managers who've been linked, you know, it's Giggs. Giggs has been shouted out. Bob Bradley's been shouted out. They don't sort of feel like Swansea managers. It's going back. But it's whether or not they want to go back to that sort of blueprint. But I had always had the impression Hugh Jenkins was completely committed to that blueprint. You know, it had worked. Swansea didn't just come up. They came up with panache. You know, they didn't just come up. They came up and they kept the ball, not necessarily playing startling football that would undo teams, but as a way to ensure that you didn't get beat. You know what? It was a breath of fresh air stuff, and it appeared to still be working even when it wasn't great under Loudrup, and even, you know, when it wasn't great under Monk, there were still patches where it was very good indeed. And it just seems to me to be a real... It seems to me to be a real shame that in an era where we're beginning to talk more and more about clubs committing to an identity and having a certain identity and being able to go down that route, and there's a lot of big clubs, you know, bigger clubs than Swansea, I'm not being disrespectful, but for instance, you know, Manchester City are part of the Guardiola move is to try to create a template for this is what we want our football club to be, on and off the pitch, from the under-23s, the under-18s, the under-16, the ladies. We want to be this sort of football team. Liverpool with Klopp and with, you know, everything that goes on, we want to be this sort of football team. Arsenal, you know, everyone's decided they want to be sort of the more than a club thing. We want to be a project and we go and do our thing. And Swansea had nailed it. So to undo it all is the area where everyone else is either beginning to get it sorted or work towards it or understand the value of it, that it gets you through the tough times as well as the good times. Swansea have gone, nah, not for us, that really. We're just going to do some mad stuff for a while and see what happens.
Yeah, we're going to follow the blueprint of the clubs that get relegated. that's so much more sensible. It sounds mad, but that's what's happened. We had this wonderful formula, and we were envied by most clubs in the Premier League, if I'm honest. Even clubs who were bigger than us and were finishing bigger, higher up the table than us. You know, they were looking at us and saying, "Well, if only we had that kind of organisation, that kind of commitment to a philosophy and ideals, then, you know, we could overachieve too." It, nobody can really understand this. It must look as baffling from the outside as it is from the inside. I have just no way of explaining why we've gone down this route.
Okay, then. The side that we expect to see next weekend, the Swansea side that we expect to see, it'll be compact. I think it has been mostly this season, certainly with that front five, the way in which it plays around and off Llorente. It's, you know, they've been getting people close to him, it's fair to say, as it's been wearing on, and they've been getting better and better at it. And I suspect they may well look for runners off Llorente's touches and flicks there, with Sigurdsson and Routledge, for instance, looking to get beyond. But the side that plays against City, it's Fabianski in goal, Rangel and Norton are the fullbacks, Van der Hooman and Matt in there as well. You mentioned he played Britain and Cork together last for the first time last week. Sigurdsson for Routledge and Llorente. Do you expect to see anything particularly different?
It's hard to tell, if I'm honest, because of we still don't know what kind of mindset Greenland's going to be in, whether he's still going to be even in charge on Saturday. We suspect he will be, and if he is, I hope that he'd go with a similar team, if not the same team. Because it did play very well against Manchester City. It was that match was very, very even until Man City got that penalty in the 65th minute. Yeah. And from then on, they did dominate the game. But you know, for long periods of that match, we were as good, if not better, than City. And it was a return, really, to the good old days, the passing and the movement, the triangles, playing with width, not just booting the ball up to Llorente, actually using his strength and getting the ball to his feet so he could hold it up and bring in players. I'd want to see that as well against Liverpool, because if I'm honest, from what I've seen from Liverpool this season, there are similarities there between the Klopp's philosophy and Guardiola's in terms of the high press and the high energy pressing as well. We did find a way for much of that game of playing around that pressing game. In a way which I don't think any other team had against City before we played against them. So I'd like to see a similar team. The only change that I'd possibly advise is moving Norton back to right back instead of Rangel, just to cope with the pace that Liverpool would have on the break. But other than that, I thought, like I said, we played very well against Manchester City. Certainly the best we've played in a very long while. So I wouldn't advise on too many changes, no.
They're good footballers, and that's the key thing. I think it's, you know, hopefully from your point of view, at least the manager doesn't grow fearful and try to make them not be good footballers, if you know what I mean. I mean, I for instance, one of our regular contributors, John Gibbons, is often does this show with me. You know, he's quietly of the view that Jack Cork's the most underrated player in the league, and I think he might be right. You know, because he can play football. That's the thing. He's got a great engine on him, lovely touch, wins his battles, and can pass the ball, and is eminently sensible as a footballer, you know what I mean. He understands how the game works, and he picks his little bits of space and his little triangles.
Cork's actually struggled this season,
really,
to get going. He has last season and season four. I would have agreed with you. I do think he's just a player that does the basics very, very well and very neatly. He's just an intelligent midfielder that can do a bit of everything. But this season, he's just not quite been switched on. He's not been as commanding a presence in midfield as he was last season, and I think he's just struggled to find his way a little bit, which surprised us because he's been a pretty consistent performer the whole time he's been with us, but he's probably going through his worst spell with us at the moment. And even against City, when everybody else had very, very good performances, he had a decent performance but didn't really kick on beyond that. Hopefully he can start finding his best form now, and against a team like Liverpool, I do think you need players who are going to really let themselves be known in midfield. I do think you need that kind of presence there if you are going to really match up to Liverpool. So, like you said, at his best, he is a brilliantly underrated footballer who probably should be in the England squad. May not say much at the state that the England squad did at the moment.
Could be manager, mate. He could be manager.
Anybody could, let's face it. But this season he's just still trying to find his feet. And he's not the only one in the squad, in fairness to him. There are quite a few good players there who still haven't really hit top form yet. But hopefully his best is still to come.
Okay, Guy. So can you give me a prediction?
I think it'll probably be 3-1 to Liverpool. I think they're going to be goals. But I just think when push comes to shove, you're so clinical at the moment that you've got goals coming from every single angle. I just don't think over 90 minutes we're really going to be able to keep you out for that long. So, I'll go for 3-1. But the performance is probably what's most important at this stage.
Okay, back into the room for find out what everyone else thinks. But huge thank you indeed to Gito Clewellyn for letting us know what he thinks. Oliver's Army, Elvis Costello and the Attractions. It's been boisterous this hour on Radio City Talk. Neil Atkinson, Rob Gutman, Andy Heaton and Gareth Roberts all pushing their way into the naughty corner this week, the way in which it's going. Gito talking about their loss of identity, Gareth, which is interesting. It's a strange thing really that, you know, you've got a football club like Swansea. About 12 months ago they were the envy of, I think, every side that tends to finish in the bottom 10 in England in the Premier League and going right the way down to the Championship, etc, etc, and they've just seemed to have lost their way quite profoundly.
Yeah, they do, don't they? And they seem to be in a bit of a hole. Everything that's sort of coming out from, even from, you know, from the top, from the manager. The manager's talking about, you know, I think I could lose my job if we lose to Liverpool. He's being very upfront about that. He said he's already met the chairman and things like that. You got the owners flying in, which all seems very much, you know, they're coming in to axe him after they get battered by Liverpool. And the fans are all in a dark place as well. And yeah, they seem to get an awful lot right. And everyone was holding them up as being, you know, a great model for a football club about, you know, the way the fans were involved and the fans owned a certain percentage of the club and all the rest of it. And the way they seem quite sensible with the money. They seem quite sensible in terms of the coaches they employed, in that, you know, one followed the other in terms of style. You know, Martinez, then Rodgers into, who was after?
Loudrup.
And into Monk as well. And it seemed like, you know, this is a good way to run a football club, and everyone spoke really positively about them. Seems to have gone very wrong very quick, and all doom and gloom coming out of South Wales.
All doom and gloom, Andy, but this is the sort of game where we've been weak. I think there's been a lot of talk about breaking sides down at home, but also second half of last season we weren't that impressive away from home against bottom half sides, and you know, we were resting people, we were making a couple of changes here and there, but even, you know, right the way through. And even looking at Burnley this season, for instance, you can call it an anomaly, but you've got to make it an anomaly. And this is, it's huge, this is what I'm saying. We've got to capitalise whatever happens because of Spurs versus City. This is what it's about. It's another acid test for this Liverpool side. I expect them to come through the other side. What do you think?
We need to capitalise on their inertia that's around the club at the moment.
Start strong.
Yeah, start strong. I'd take advantage of it. You get the feel and the only team that's going to make life difficult for Liverpool is Liverpool in this one. I think if they come out and they start strong and they put the foot down early on, it could be a fairly straightforward game. Saying that, I must have said that, I've had the pound for every time I've said that over the last God knows how many seasons. And I think that there's a bit of the Everton mental fragility creeping in here amongst us. The way like they kid themselves that it's going to be a problem. And I think it's as much a problem, an element in the fan psyche than it is the team. And I think this is a brilliant opportunity to put that one to bed, as we did against Hull. It seems easy now, but you know, yeah, there's a couple of people had their doubts about that result.
Yeah, Swansea looked more robust against City last week and gave them a game for about an hour. But this isn't the Swansea that they were. Hugh Jenkins has got a big job on his plate, but he's always come through. But I'm not really that interested in what they do next. I don't think we should be sitting fretting about our mental strength here. I think this is a new Liverpool. I think Klopp's, the evidence is that he used the barrier between last season and this very, very wisely. There's a new mentality in the side. I was really impressed with comments he made a couple of weeks ago when he talked about how he didn't actually believe there was a huge difference between playing at home or away, or there shouldn't be. And I thought that's a really crucial development if you can begin to get that into players' mindsets. And I think Liverpool will do a number on Swansea.
You starting Sturridge or not, Rob?
That's me. I'm always starting Sturridge more or less because I really, really enjoy watching him. I don't think he will start. I think he will go with, apart from Dejan Lovren returning for Clavan, I think he goes entirely unchanged.
You going starting Sturridge or not, Andy?
I would, but I don't think he will.
Okay, Gareth?
No,
you wouldn't, and you don't think he will?
I wouldn't, and I don't think he will.
Okay, that's the Sturridge thing boxed off very, very quickly. I like that sort of stuff. I presume you're all starting Lovren. None of you are going to start Clavan.
If Lovren's fit, he goes in.
Lovren's fit, he goes right the way in. Okay, then. I feel like, Gareth, you know, it's funny at the minute talking about the Reds because the manager goes on Monday Night Football and tells you what the approach is going to be. You know, he's not going to have any surprises. We know the intensity Liverpool are going to play with because that's the way it is now. Yeah. It feels as though it's non-negotiable. There might be a bit of tactical cleverness in every game. I thought there was a bit of tactical cleverness against Hull, for instance, but we know what the expectations are on these footballers, and that's that win, lose or draw, Swansea come off that pitch having had the hardest 90 minutes of the season. That feels like that's your minimum requirement.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Liverpool, have got a real swagger about them. They're striding round, and other clubs are looking at Liverpool now and going, well, hang on, I don't know how we stop this. And I quite like that Klopp went on Monday Night Football, because it was almost, I can talk about my team and my club, because you're not going to be able to stop us. We're going to come at you from every angle. And that's what they did against Hull. Straight away from the first whistle, no complacency, straight in, swarming all over them. Every time they had the ball, 3, 4 and 5 players, closing them down, getting stuck in. Any team is going to find that hard to live with, really. And what was interesting before, I just thought I'll stick this into Google, because I thought, what if you're a journalist right now in South Wales trying to be positive about Swansea? That must be a really difficult job. But you can't write solely negative stuff about a football team, because people want some glimmer of hope. So someone's wrote a piece there, I think it was South Wales Echo, something like that, and it was like, this is how Swansea could beat Liverpool, this is what they can do to Liverpool. And it was all sort of, well, Milner's not really a left back, is he? And then it was like, this Matip lad, he's new, isn't he? And that Clavin lad, he's new, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it was all clutching at straws. All of those players mentioned there have shown the worth already to Liverpool. And I'm looking sort of 1-11 through Liverpool's side. I know it's not 1-11, but you know what I mean. And I'm just happy with it. I don't see anyone there now who's going to start at Swansea who I'm like, I'm worried about this fella. This fella's going to throw it away. It just looks fantastic to me.
Talking about number ones and lashing things, who's had a medicine ball thrown at them this week?
Go on.
The goalkeeper. He knows really early in the week that Karius is going to get Swansea, and then after that they look at it. He didn't say he's going to back him permanently. He never said Simon Mignolet was completely off the team. If that's deliberate, it's a bit of a gamble, because... And one that could pay off. If he's that mentally confident that he doesn't care, great. And that might be deliberate. He's testing him a little bit. But out of 1-11, the one, and I shouldn't really be concerned because I think I rate him, the one position I'm concerned about is the goalie. And if he has got that mental strength to make that position his own, it's a big day for him.
Very quickly, I want a scoreline prediction. Rob Gutman.
3-0 to Liverpool.
Andy Heaton.
2-1.
Gareth Roberts.
5-0 to Liverpool.
Excellent stuff. This is the Anfield Wrap. 5-0 to Liverpool. We'll see. Any win will do for me. Up these Reds. Get into these lads early.